Hello, everyone. This is Peter Chadi, Chairman of Creative Media, and I am back for a special edition of my Fearless Media podcast. This is after close of business day, after markets have closed on Monday, March 13th, obviously before markets open on March 14th, and all eyes in the media tech world are still on Silicon Valley Bank and what the current state of play is and how all of us should be thinking about it and how those of you who have funds or have been banking with Silicon Valley Bank, what you could do about it, how you should think about it, what are next steps, you know, all those kinds of things. And today I'm joined by an expert who I work very closely with, James Gowers of a finance and accounting services firm called Matcha out of the Bay Area. And James works very closely with tech startups directly in Silicon Valley. And he has 25 years of experience, decades of tech startup experience, and is also a fine graduate of the Harvard Business School. So James, thanks for joining me today to make sense of all of this, because I know I have a lot of questions. So I'm gonna start for right away and dig right into it. Markets closed a few hours ago as we're recording this. What is the latest state of play here post-close markets on March 13th?
Hey, thank you, Peter, for having me, by the way. Turns out, all of the account holders at SVB are going to be made whole, right? So as of today, you know, all the deposits that were initially potentially lost over the weekend are accessible to account holders. So this is a huge relief to everybody, not just tech companies that were directly affected or VC funds, but the entire economy and the banking system. And the reason why this happened is because if they had let this continue and, you know, had imposed, I don't know, 50% losses or more on account holders in this particular case, this would have spread to other banks, because the underlying issue, the core reason for why this happened, is actually not so much tech related. It's more to do with the general banking situation and the difference between low interest rates, easy money in the previous 5+ years, and then the last 12 months, the tightening of increases in interest rates, right, to battle inflation. So this would have been a major issue if they hadn't done that today or announced that yesterday. Actually, it was announced yesterday, implemented today.
So it was a classic run to the bank, which caused all of this.
Yep.
And so just the nuts and bolts of this all is Silicon Valley Bank as a brand and as an organization, is it gone?
So yes and no. There is some talk about potential acquirers of the assets, the remaining assets, including the brand name. Nobody knows how that's going to play out, right? It's theoretically possible another large bank or wealthy individuals. There's even rumors about Elon Musk wanting to bid, right?
Of course there is. And of course he will.
Of course he will. You know, there's some rumor that somebody might buy those assets and then try to recapitalize the bank and basically try to continue business, but it won't be in nearly the same scale. It'll take a long time to rebuild. You know, a lot of account holders are aggressively moving their funds out of the bank, by the way. So that's been work we've been doing with our clients today as well, moving out of Silicon Valley Bank into, you know, other banks. So, you know, the question is what's left in a few days, right? Nobody knows for sure. So we'll have to see how this unfolds. So theoretically, it's possible somebody might buy it.
Okay. Nobody knows for sure what the assets are, but regardless, the government has stepped in and guaranteed all investors, right?
Correct.
Yeah. But my understanding is that that is the guarantee, but for management and shareholders, they're wiped out.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So, So does Silicon Valley consider this to be a bailout, corporate welfare of any kind?
So interesting question. So I don't think, so the thing is obviously the recipient of this decision are not going to necessarily view it that way. I think politically, individuals or groups outside of the tech world might view it that way, right? I actually think this is the thing is, this is contagion issue, right? A contagion issue. If they hadn't stepped in here and actually made everybody whole, This would have spread to other banks. This would have spread to other sectors of the economy. This would have been really bad, because the underlying root cause behind all this is systemic, not just particular to Silicon Valley. It's just Silicon Valley Bank happened to be the first one to be affected by it. So I think we have to take a bigger picture view here, that it benefits the entire economy. It benefits everybody else who's banking with other banks. It benefits everybody who benefits indirectly from technology companies and job creation and spending and innovation long term, right? So that's sort of my view on that. But certainly there's going to be some political fallout, you know, from this.
Bailouts are in the eyes and ears of the beholder, right?
Because indeed.
I was looking at some of the stories, and you have Silicon Valley, famed Silicon Valley libertarian David Sacks as an example, who's buddies with Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, who is a notorious libertarian who bemoans corporate welfare, but yet he was yelling for Yellen and Powell, where are you? Where are you to help this out? So it's interesting how life works that way. But let's get back down to the practical, the logistics of this all. So SVB failed. The government stepped in. Did any other banks fail? Because when I woke up this morning, I have my mortgage with First Republic Bank. And when I first woke up, I saw that, yes, it had failed. But then I saw something later that said JP Morgan was stepping in as a backstop. But what is the latest with other banks?
Well, Signature Bank was also taken over in the last couple of days, right? So there's another bank, but that's associated more with the crypto collapse, crypto issues. And there's a couple more smaller banks also, I believe, where the FDIC stepped in. First Republic was certainly, there were big rumors about that bank also on Friday. I believe share price dropped 50%-ish or so.
I remember you first told me about that. And since I have my mortgage with First Republic, I had my house. It was going to be free and clear, which was a wonderful thing.
You were hoping for failure.
I never hope. I want everybody to succeed, James.
Yeah. So, you know, but the idea behind all this sort of announcement is that they're trying to put a stop to that, right? They're trying to put a stop to that contagion. So additional banks are affected. But my understanding as of 4 p.m. Pacific on Monday, March 13, no other banks have yet gone bankrupt, right, or have been taken over beyond those handful. So hopefully this should be the end of it, hopefully. Now, there is a bigger issue long term, though, because, again, the root cause has to be dealt with.
Okay, so explain that.
Right. So the reason why Silicon Valley Bank failed, there's some issues around bungled announcements and timing and some potential management missteps, but it's always easy to point the finger after the fact. But, you know, the fundamental issue is that with easy money in the last 5+ years, right, deposits at all the banks just swelled, including Silicon Valley Bank, right? So, imagine VC money, you know, venture capital funds, you know, had more and more cash to invest over the years. They put more money to work into startups, right? So the startups in turn then took that money and put that money into Silicon Valley Bank as savings and deposits, right, that they were going to use to invest in their businesses. So the deposits swelled, right? And a bank then has to go and do something with those deposits. They can't just sit there and keep the cash sitting, not earning anything. So banks buy supposedly safe US treasuries, for example, right, bonds. But when they buy those bonds, they lock in the interest rate at that time, right? So if you're buying, you know, $100 million worth of bonds in 2020 or 2021, when interest rates are near zero, right? And let's say a bond might be, you know, 1%, 1.5%, generates 1%, 1.5% return. Okay, you lock into that. And as long as you hold that bond to maturity, you get your principal back, the 100 million, plus you get that 1.5%, you know, in interest payments on top of that, right? Which is fine. But then the moment the Fed started increasing its interest rates aggressively to fight inflation in the last 12 months, suddenly the value, the market value of those bonds that these banks purchased in the last few years drops. Because if I want to sell my bonds, those old bonds, so to speak, on the open market, nobody's going to pay you the same $100 million that you bought the bonds for, because I can get, for the same $100 million, I can get a bond that pays me 5% interest today rather than 1.5%, right? So the value of those original bonds that these banks are holding are just were dropping, right? Dramatically so. Now, again,
well, and in that situation, the reason why this happened here is once there was this run on the bank and the depositors were seeking their money back, obviously was the obligation of the bank to return them, but the funds weren't there unless it liquidated these bonds at a substantial discount because of what you just explained. And that's what happened here in the whole the cascading of dominoes. I want to ask you one question on that, and then I want you to continue.
Yeah.
Based on that, when you were saying that SVB had to do something with all these funds that came in, I think some could question that, whether that's really true, whether it had to do something other than just kind of hold the money as a minimum. But it's from my perspective, the investing in T-bills when interest rates are essentially zero, it was inevitable. I think everybody on the planet was thinking it's inevitable that interest rates can only go up. So I think it's a fair criticism of management of Silicon Valley Bank, which is not Monday morning quarterbacking, but it's a fair criticism to say, listen, investing in T-bills at those kinds of lows, is that really a smart move to make?
Right. So very good point. So the issue, though, is it's about timing, right? And the pace of change. So yeah. The Fed has been increasing interest rates at a record pace almost, right? So this has gone up dramatically in just 12 months. And so it gives banks with their massive deposits, right, and investments, little time to react.
Yeah.
So you're kind of almost stuck. You're trying to chase the market, right? And what happened was that in addition to those changes in interest rates in Silicon Valley Bank's specific case, all the startups, right, were getting less funding because of the general turn in the economy, right? So everybody's been pulling back partly because of crypto fallout and just sort of a risk appetite change in the last 12 months, right? So then startups were pulling more deposits suddenly out of Silicon Valley Bank in the last 12 months as well. And then Silicon Valley Bank, to cover those withdrawals, had to begin to sell some of those bonds that they had purchased, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But when you start selling those bonds, you have to book those as losses, right? And that then impacts the share price. So then suddenly deposit withdrawals kept increasing. They had to keep selling more bonds. And eventually the gap became too large. And then they had to do they had to improvise and raise additional capital through a share sale. And that's sort of there was a $2.5 billion shortfall. And that happened last week or 2 weeks ago. And that whole process of trying to sell additional shares to make up that shortfall, that leaked and that was bungled. And then suddenly the run on the bank happened on Thursday morning.
I remember, I think it was last Wednesday, where I saw the CEO of Silicon Valley Bank, his tweet saying that, you know, that everything's good here. That's all, you know, no concern. And I immediately tweeted something out saying, when somebody in the financial community tells you that you shouldn't be concerned, you should be concerned, right?
Yes.
So, okay. Now you work, as I said at the beginning, with tech startups, and you're in the belly of the beast in Silicon Valley. You've been in this game for decades. You've worked with premier companies. You know this world. So your clients who were banking, and over 50% of VC-backed companies in the United States had a relationship with Silicon Valley Bank. So what was the feeling like with your clients when they first came to you? And then how are they feeling now that the government has come in to assure them that all of their deposits are safe?
Well, this was pretty much a nuclear bomb exploding in the middle of Silicon Valley, right? And I remember we first noticed something on Wednesday night, Thursday morning, right? That was kind of when the first real concerns in terms of a potential bank run came across our desks. And our clients actually weren't necessarily aware of that, right? They're running their businesses, but we're keeping an eye on their numbers and finances. And we reached out to our clients and explained something is happening, right? But it was sort of literally unfolding in real time. So, you know, we had to gather our facts, figure out what's going on. Some clients, and we quickly decided or determined that this is too risky to stay in Silicon Valley Bank, because the risk of ending up with zero or near zero, right, if you don't move fast, is too high to just sort of wait and see. Right? I mean, you don't want to wait and see, end up with nothing or half of your assets if you can move quickly and wire the money out to another bank, right? And so that's the hard, cold logic at that moment. And so some of our clients acted immediately on our recommendation. And some clients didn't. They were just, there was disbelief that this would even happen, right? This is such a sort of, it's a black swan event, I guess. Mm-hmm. People are just not, can't relate to that kind of situation. And it's a shock. And in fact, some board members were giving wait and see advice, right? And so you have a typical startup CEO or co-founder who needs to make a decision in these kind of exceptional circumstances in a matter of hours, and you're getting potentially conflicting advice from people they respect, right? So what do you do? So a lot of founders ended up not getting out of Silicon Valley Bank in time. We were able to rescue about, I would say, 75% of our clients at the time, and also helped another major investor group to get out early, because we kind of alerted them to what was going on. So it all comes down to recognizing what the issues are, what the risks are, and then moving quickly and being creative about it.
Okay, so for those who didn't get out, were you counseling them all weekend, essentially, because nobody knew what was going to happen?
Correct. Yes. So those on Friday night, they shut the bank down. I believe it was Friday noonish or 10 a.m., something like that. It was over, right? And I remember a client who finally decided to take our advice. And then we were sitting there on Friday morning. It was past 10 a.m., unfortunately. And it just we couldn't send any wires. It was too late, right? They were distressed. But the next step then is, well, what does all this mean now, right? What, we're going to lose our money or what? So the next step is figuring out what would the legal process be, or what would the FDIC do next, right? And what percentage of this deposits are actually going to be made available or not. So the way this works is that there are certain insured deposits, like for personal bank accounts, right? It's $250,000 are insured per account holder. But then the rest of the money is uninsured. So if I have, say, $10 million of my startup's money in Silicon Valley Bank, yeah, I can get $250,000, but $9.75 million are gone initially, right? So then the FDIC comes in, they look at all the remaining assets, and they then give what's called an advanced dividend, and they say, okay, X percent of everybody's assets, be it 20% or 50% or 80%, whatever that number is, will be available in a week from now. You get your first $250,000 on Monday, and then we'll figure out the rest by the end of the week, and then you get X percent. And after that, you might get a little bit more depending on the fire sale of the bank and what else they can extract from those assets, right? But basically, on Friday, I mean, this was carnage in Silicon Valley. Every affected tech company thought they might be going out of business in the coming month or so.
Yeah, literally closing down.
Yeah.
And so the mood, and it's obvious that there was tremendous distress, but you were on the front lines feeling it from these founders and CEOs.
Yes. And there's an element of there's an emotional support as well, right? That comes along with it. There's problem solving, and getting things done and lining up things and understanding issues, but also just being there to help and being there to listen and trying to work through all this and make sense of what's going on, right? And so it was a very, very critical, you know, 4 days, 3 days, until on Sunday, news came out, I believe it was 6 p.m. East Coast time, when the FDIC and a number of other institutions announced that they've decided to basically backstop everything and make sure everybody gets their money back, because it's a systemic risk to the banking system. So they're trying to put a halt to any further contagion. And so that was a massive sigh of relief on Sunday afternoon.
So for those people you were talking to who were impacted, did most, would you say the majority believed that the government would step in and everything would be all right?
No. I think that the majority believed this was going to be a major problem, because there was no, most people believed in that middle road. You know, they're going to announce some percentage of deposits might be made available depending on what the assets are. So there was, I mean, the Friday, Saturday, and most of Sunday, I mean, the view was, we're in a war situation. We have to triage and try to do the best we can. Everybody was looking for additional sources of short-term cash, right? Can they find, you know, loans somewhere? Can, you know, the VC firms themselves, by the way, who also had their billions in Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah, the right? Biggest names.
Yeah, in venture business. Yeah, and so, you know, if you go to your board, you're a startup founder, you go to your board, you say, look, I have this issue, of course. I need some short, can you give me some short-term additional money so at least I can pay payroll for the next, you know, for this month? Well, even those, and many VCs would say, yes, tell me what you need. But even those guys were struggling oftentimes with not having enough funds, right? And so it became this kind of weird dynamic, you know, but they didn't want to say no, so they said yes. So there's a difference between the short-term, the first few weeks, but then what happens after that? If you don't have any more assets to invest in building your business,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do. You have to close down.
I was listening to an interesting podcast earlier today from by Scott Galloway, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you know that name.
Yep,
Scott Galloway is quite the character. His podcast is great, but they were talking about some of these issues, and the point being that it wasn't just so much that Silicon Valley Bank was concentrate on the tech sector. It's really, he was saying that it was, you know, 20 to 30 venture capital firms who were then instructing their portfolio companies on what to do or what not to do. And so it was like power in the hands of a very few who created this situation. Well, the overall structural way things are structured, that creates the opportunity for this situation to happen. But it was a relatively small number of decision makers who really caused this to happen. And so you had, you know, Peter Thiel as an example. Peter Thiel, notorious, of course, and he was instructing all his portfolio companies, his CEOs, to take the money out. Is there a feeling that Silicon Valley Bank, which banked all of these companies and these venture capitalists, but then subsequently the venture capitalists turned on them, essentially created this panic in the first place? Is there a feeling of loyalty or non-loyalty, or does that matter? I'm just curious what the zeitgeist is today in Silicon Valley, since you're right in the belly of the beast.
So I think that will take a little bit more time to kind of evolve, right? There's going to be discussions. We can reflect on this. There's going to be a view formed of what happened and how to think about all this. But I can tell you when one way to think about it is that when your existence is on the line, right? And this is a extinction level event, right? I mean, if you do not get your money out, you're dead in the water. I mean, it's not like, you know, there's one particular company I invested, you know, $10,000 in that stock and they collapsed. Oh, that's not a good, you know, I lost some money. That's not, or crypto. It's, you know, I lost some Bitcoin or the value of X, you know, cryptocurrency dropped to zero. Or, you know, yes, there's obviously there's also big losses there, but But this is different in a sense that you can't even make payroll. You can't, I mean, you're dead in the water. As a company, you need your deposit, you need your funds, right, to operate. So I think in those cases, the only logical decision, cold hard decision, is to protect yourself. And this is why confidence and trust in the banking sector is so critical, right? It doesn't matter how modern technology is, how well capitalized the bank is, you know, how what the brand name is, or anything like that. Bank runs happen when there's a lack of confidence and trust. It doesn't matter where in the world, including here, right? And so you need to protect yourself. You can't afford. Imagine if you were a family and you had your money, all your money and savings in there. And if you don't pull your money fast enough, you lose everything. You lose your house. You have to move. You can't pay. You know, there's lots of implications here. So I am actually, I don't think the sort of finger pointing at the VC firms or certain VC firms that kind of became public early on is the right way to think about this. I actually think they had to do what they had to do to protect the companies they invested in and their own funds. Because that's the trigger. It's not somebody crying, you know, crying fire. That's not why this happened. It was the bungled attempt, right, to raise that extra cash, and then the concerns just triggered out. Now the other thing is, when you see a timestamp for a VC announcement, right, say, I don't know, 11 a.m. on Thursday, well, remember that there are huge events leading up to that already in the previous many, many, many hours, maybe 12 hours, right, that then trigger the VC to say, get out. And so it's not like they just randomly decided to say that. There was a lot of evidence that there was a bank run going to unfold. So you want to get out first.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly some people, and there's always some people who think everything, who believe that it was almost like, okay, this is our opportunity to take Silicon Valley Bank out, you know? And so when you trust and loyalty, there's certainly that kind of rumbling out there, as there always will be.
Yeah.
So if you were talking about contagion, and this happened to Silicon Valley Bank, which was the fastest bank run, I think, ever, even, you know, it wasn't the biggest, it was the second biggest in US history, banking history, but in terms of the speed of it, because of how technology has changed over just those few years, is any bank safe? Is Bank of America safe? Or is it vulnerable to similar kinds of forces?
Oh, absolutely. It's just as vulnerable, right? Which is why the FDIC and the Fed stepped in and said, we're going to make everybody whole, right? They're trying to stop that contagion. The fundamental issue is that this whole issue around the bonds and deposits applies to every bank in the US, right? And in fact, Bank of America actually has the biggest challenge right now. So the gap between...
Don't tell me that, James. That's my bank. So I have First Republic Bank that held my mortgage that may have gone under. I don't even know as we're recording this, but it certainly was about to. And then I have B of A, and you're saying they're the most vulnerable of the big banks. So now I'm be afraid, be very afraid.
Right. So the underlying issue there is that I'm B of A as well, by the way. But
that makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, the gap between the market value of the bonds and the book value is apparently, according to Wall Street Journal, about 45%, which is higher than what it was for Silicon Valley Bank. But as long as there is no accelerated withdrawal of money, of the, you know, deposits from Bank of America, it's going to be fine. And I suspect that the Fed, the FDIC, you know, they're all going to step up to make sure that they don't have to sell those bonds before they mature. Otherwise, it might trigger the same issue, right? The same outcome. So the issue is having to sell those bonds at a price that causes big losses. Mm-hmm. And I think that's TBD in the coming days and weeks. But in principle, the underlying problem affects every single bank in the US, some more than others, right?
Okay, so if we see this movie, we've seen this movie before, and despite the talk of no bailouts, nonetheless, whatever you call this, it's a backstop and coming in and guaranteeing the funds. Is there a moral hazard here where if this keeps happening time and time again, there's no reason to believe that the next time it's going to be any different. So does this really change behavior or does it not? Or does it strangely actually make actors be even more willing to take chances because they know that the feds are going to step in?
Well, what I'm seeing with our portfolio companies and in Silicon Valley discussions and more broadly, it's the opposite, right? So everybody's now extremely risk conscious. So for example, everybody's creating bank accounts at multiple banks. So instead of banking, let's say only with Silicon Valley Bank, right? Let's have like accounts with three banks and then manage, you know, be smart about how the different funds are managed, right? People are also looking at certain types of bank accounts that are accounts that actually have more than just $250,000 in insurance. You know, there's certain sweep accounts, for example, money market accounts, sweep accounts that actually are insured, I believe, up to 125 million or so. So there are different options in how, you know, where to put the money. And I think it's making actually decision makers smarter about what they need to do and more prudent about, you know, balancing risk. So it's the opposite effect, I believe. I don't think that the underlying reason here for this is a moral hazard problem. I think it's a unique confluence of events that weren't anticipated. Now, some people would argue the Fed and you know should have anticipated this because this is not rocket science when you now look at what happened, right? You take in deposits, you have to buy bonds at low interest rate, then the deposits come back out, you have to sell the bonds, but in the meantime, the interest rate is way up here, so there's a big gap. I mean, it's not rocket science. It wasn't anticipated and dealt with, maybe because events just overtook decision makers, I don't know, in terms of the interest rate increase in the last 12 months. There is some discussion about tightening up regulatory oversight and some of the tests these banks have to do. There was also loosening of regulations, by the way, a couple of years ago, that might have actually, if they had kept those in place, this might have surfaced much sooner and could have been preempted. But I don't know enough about the details to make any specific hard claims around that. But there's certainly discussion about it out there. So I don't think it's a moral hazard issue. I think it's structural, systemic. It should have been dealt with probably at the regulatory level. I see a lot of people make much smarter decisions now going forward.
Okay, so the idea of a business, so companies out there who are listening to this, of spreading your funds across multiple banks, that's a really nice practical idea.
Yeah.
I'm curious, do you think that's an important thing to do? We were kind of joking about B of A, but should we be just joking about it? Do you think it makes sense from a personal standpoint to also spread your funds around?
Right. So the rules are that if you, let's say, for example, you have a checking account and a savings account at the same bank, the assets are combined and you only get $250,000 insurance on both combined, right? So it's not like you get $250,000 on one on your checking and $250,000 on your savings, right? So one way to do it, though, if you had the savings account at another bank, you get $250,000, right? So you get twice the coverage, right? So you could argue that splitting across different banks will give you more insurance. Now, it depends, of course, on your net worth and all that, right? If you have a lot of money, then it's a whole different discussion because $250,000 is a drop in the bucket, typically for wealthy individuals, very wealthy individuals. But in general, the principle is if you can maybe move your savings to another bank, keep your checkings with your original bank, you have double the insurance. You can also look at different types of investment accounts, right, to maybe get higher insurance. I know, for example, it's interesting, Mercury Bank, which is sort of a bank that competed here, or it is competing, or used to compete with Silicon Valley Bank in for tech companies, offers $1 million of insurance. And I'm trying to figure out exactly how they do it, but they have a way of offering $1 million because they're creative about the back-end accounts that they're kind of moving the money into.
That sounds a little bit
it might be
being creative. I'm not I'm not putting a negative spin on it, but it's certainly a spin to like dig in more deeply before you go after that.
Yes, exactly. You have to be careful about what this all means, and you have to read the fine print. But the principle is, you know, that there are different options out there, and you're right. It applies to us as well as individuals, right? To be smart about that. Yeah.
So maybe an obvious question, but like a Schwab or a Vanguard or any of these, same rules apply. It's $250,000 insurance.
Yes, as long as it's not investment account. Investment accounts are handled differently, right?
Okay.
There's no insurance, so it has to be a checking account type account, right? Or a savings account. So you have to be careful, again, read the fine print, because they can market things in a certain way that sounds like you have a insured checking account with them, but actually it's not really.
But if you have an investment account, your investments are with a company. And so if for some reason your custodian goes under, it doesn't impact the ownership that you have.
Right. So if let's say you're banking or investing with company X, and there's a custodian bank behind that they actually, they move the money to and you know, they keep it safe. Even if the company you're kind of apparently investing with goes bankrupt, then your funds are still safe in that custodian bank. So that's one of the big differences. Yeah.
Okay. So here we are, 4:40, almost 4:45 p.m. Pacific time on Monday. And so markets open not that long from now in the U.S. Is there anything that people are looking for tomorrow morning? Are there any big stories of how everybody listening should be thinking about Tuesday morning?
So I think, Wall Street is now feverishly picking through the evidence and data to figure out what's going on and analyzing the other banks. So I don't think the pressure on the other banks is going to abate anytime in the this week. I think they're going to have continued pressure on stock prices. I suspect that regulators are analyzing everything carefully and going back to all the other banks and having meetings with them about their situations. And we might see additional announcements in the coming days to further prevent any potential contagion from this, and give confidence to the system, right? That things are stable and fine and will be fine. I do think that it will wake people up a little bit more that, wow, but if you can have a nuclear bomb going off in Silicon Valley, so to speak, right? Like this within 24 hours or 48 hours, what else is there, right? In terms of risk that we're not anticipating or not taking seriously. So it's possible that we're going to see a further kind of flight to quality across the economy and less risk appetite in the near term in terms of investments. So we'll see. We'll have to see how this unfolds.
So is there anything else that if I'm CEO of a company that has been doing banking with Silicon Valley Bank, so I'm now assured by the government that I will get my funds back. Once I get those funds, I guess, wired to me in some way, I don't know how that will be handled. How is that handled? When they say it's guaranteed, what does that mean?
So literally, they've reopened Silicon Valley Bank accounts. It's like nothing happened. You can log in. The money's there. You can wire the money out. You can pay bills. It's as though nothing has happened. So you still see the same balances, same accounts. Now, the challenge is getting in because everybody's trying to get in. So it's been a big challenge today trying to even get access and to the website. But the money's there.
Okay. Okay, the money's there. So you're advising your clients to, the money's back in your accounts, withdraw it, put it in multiple different banks. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Any other things that are that a CEO should be doing right now?
So I think there is a question about communication to your team, right? You need to make sure that your employees, your vendors, your suppliers, your customers know that you have everything under control, everything's fine, there's no disruption to your business, everybody gets paid payroll, nothing changes. I think that's a very important message to deliver to your stakeholders if you're the CEO of one of these companies, and even VC fund, right? So that's super important. Then there's obviously the operational steps around, you know, budgeting and planning and making short-term adjustments. We've been working with our clients, for example, because some clients have payment rails, right? ACH rails that they're using to deliver their services. So It's not just moving, say, your 5 million, 10 million, 20 million to another bank, but it's also reconnecting your payment rails to a different ACH provider, right? So that you can continue to function as a business. So that's also happening today and over the weekend that was happening. So there's some retooling like that. But in general, I would say the biggest next step is communication.
Yeah. Now, I think that's great advice. So listen, James, I appreciate you joining today because I think this is so many people are out there just kind of scratching their heads. Okay. They hear the big news, you know, they understand the headline stories, but what does that really mean practically speaking? So it's great to have your perspective on it. Again, everybody, it's James Gowers, who's the CEO and co-founder of Matcha, which is a finance and accounting services firm focused on tech startups in Silicon Valley. I think it's absolutely critical for everybody listening to this to have an advisor who can help walk you through these kinds of things, because with all these moving parts, and this is just one domino to fall, and you know that there's always something in life that's going to happen. So having a team member, and James, like I said, working with you, I know that you're deeply knowledgeable about this stuff. So if anybody's interested in getting connected with James, reach out to me, peter@creativemedia.biz. And similarly, on the legal front, you know, what your next steps are. How do you approach this? Okay, things may have now, you have your backstop, all that, but what are the legal processes you need to take? So I can help you with that too. With the team that I have working with me, we have experts in that kind of space that I can help guide you to. So feel free to reach out to me on that. I guess my one final kind of more philosophical point is getting back to some of the libertarians out there. And I'm not making a slam on libertarianism, but it's just funny in life how things work, where anti-big government, but then a tornado hits your community, and then where's the government? Like, why aren't you here fast enough? We have, you know, flooding. Well, I don't want to pay taxes, but nonetheless, oh, you know, there's flooding here. Government, help me out. Same here. You have some of the biggest names that are in Silicon Valley and are anti any kind of quote unquote handouts and calling for the feds to come in and rescue them and bail out their fund. It's just interesting how life works. I think it's a valuable lesson for everybody that it's like, you know, it's the obvious thing. So there's my rant of the day. It's my show. I get to rant.
You bet you can. Yes, so, absolutely.
But that was very helpful. So thanks, awesome. James. Thanks for joining me. And as developments continue, we will track it closely. And James, it wouldn't surprise me if I invite you to come back, because I get a lot out of it too, learning about, practically speaking, what this all really, really means. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Peter, for having me.